In the Garage, our weekly podcast, all things automotive here from Detroit, listened to all over the world. Well, when I have Roger Penske on, it always seems to be you get more hits. But anyway, my name is Jim O'Brien. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you so much to our guest, Mike Brudenell. We know him here in Detroit, longtime Detroit Free Press racing writer, and now out exploring the world. Good morning, Mike.
How you doing, Jim? It's a great day, and thank you for having me on.
We always play Doors music to open the door to the garage. See, everything's got a theme here, man. So, Mike, I wanted to get right into it with you because I sat up at, 6 o'clock, sat there and watched the NASCAR press conference with the drivers, which I thought was kind of strange, the way they felt like they were justifying it afterwards. What was your take on these rule changes?
Man, there are some interesting things. I mean, it's I guess it's aimed at promoting more aggressive racing and strategy. I mean, the rules are pretty mind-boggling from the setup of races consisting of three stages and points allotted to down the road during the championship, which is not being called the chase.
The playoffs, is that right?
Overall, I think it's good. I want to see how it all works out at Daytona because it is a little confusing. I think fans are going to take a while to catch up with it, Jim. But if the racing is good throughout, and it seems like that's what they want, particularly the front end, and then the winner getting snaring some nice points toward the later championship section, it probably can't be bad. What do you think?
I am concerned about. Well, it can be bad. I think it could be. I mean, the fact they're doing the caution between each segment. Make it kind of like feels like a heat race to me. I almost feel like they're doing that for the fans.
Well, I think they're doing it for TV because the ratings have slipped, as we know, and like all sports, the sanctioning bodies are looking for ways to grab the people's attention span, which has become a lot shorter, these days in all sports. So I think it's cosmetic to some degree, but it could promote pretty aggressive starts and middle sections of races where a lot of people complain about going to sleep, Jim, at a race until the last 20 laps. So again, I'm going to say I need to see this in real time.
It is interesting. I mean, like you said, Mike. I mean, you're right. Nobody. I don't know that when you go to a race, though, if you're a fan. In the history of ever, have you ever watched a highlight film of NASCAR and they show you what happened on lap 80 of 200? It's just, you never see, crazy racing in Atlanta at lap 12. I mean, nobody shows those highlights, and I'm sure you don't write about those. I mean, so there's a point where it's like, I get what they're trying, but racing is all about getting to the finish, not getting to the first segment.
Absolutely.
Part.
Look, I'm an old-timer more. Conservative in my approach. You don't win a race on the first lap, you win it on the last. And, guys like Jimmy Johnson have proven that. And, but I think, France down at NASCAR and his guys are trying to, reach out to a younger audience, Jim, and keep them entertained.
I do like something else that I don't think got as much attention from people was limiting the amount of work done on cars, replacing panels, to keep the debris cautions that we see so often in NASCAR, which really...
Yeah, I hate that.
Right, but you talk about your car gets clipped and you're done, right? I mean, you're done.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Look, I think... Again, how all this plays out, we'll find out soon. There's lots of stuff on the menu. Let's see if it promotes better racing at the end of the day.
So, with NASCAR too, I've always been an advocate too. It always happens in every sport, but NASCAR I think is also going through the pains of who's your next star. It's not Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson is maybe, you could argue, he's not the face of the sport. That's Dale Jr., which I can't think of another sport where the guy who hasn't won a championship is the face of your sport. That's like saying the face of the NFL is Matthew Stafford for the Lions instead of Tom Brady. Yeah, you know what I mean? It seems weird to me that like Jimmy Johnson should be the face of the sport, But he's not. It's Junior because of the family name.
Well, pedigree and history. And now he's back after missing the half season last year, and he's married, and he seems to have recovered from this concussion problem. Look, Junior's always going to be Junior Nation until he retires, so he'll be the most popular driver in the garage. But I'm looking for, you know, Joey Logano to break out big time this year. And Brad Keselowski, both Penske drivers, I mean, they, you know, Brad had a disappointing chase last year, but a terrific season. So, I mean, I still think there's, particularly in this part of the country, there's a lot of interest with Roger's two guys in particular. And I think Joey is a young gun still. He seems to be around forever, but, you know, he's only 25 or something. You know, it's amazing. And he really gave Jimmy a, you know, a nice run last year, you know, and I think he'll even improve, you know, in 2017. So I'm looking for really good things from Joey.
I'm a huge fan of Kyle Larson because he's a train wreck on wheels. You never know what you're going to get, but God, he's so fast, but he's so out there. Yeah, he's. You and I talked about it before, Mike. He's nuts.
He you know, well, he's his background with the sprint cars, and he's great on the dirt, and he loves to get the car sideways. Not so much that is an advantage in these type of cars necessarily, but he does put on a great show. And he's a nice guy. I think he definitely will win some races. And of course, we're gonna have the season without Kyle, who I read now is possibly a U.S. Senate candidate in Missouri.
I saw that too. So Daniel Suarez is going to take over for Carl Edwards. Now
I like that move. Daniel's a good young racer. Of course, he's got a heap of money behind him, so. We'll see how much, you know, talent he does have at this level, but a good kid and good to see that diversity.
So with Carl, though, I mean, the way he walked away, and I was reading that this went back to December, right? I mean, he had talked to Joe Gibbs. He it was surprised everybody else, but he had told Gibbs ahead of time, like, I'm not coming back.
Yeah. Well, it was a very strange one, whether it was, you know, a lot of people felt it might have been a medical situation. Others felt that there is a sniff in the air that Dodge might return in the next couple of years, and that Carl could be a car owner driver, you know, for the brand. That's a possibility, but it was a very strange one because he was right at the top of his game.
Well, we've had two drivers in two major racing sports. You had Nico Rosberg walk away with the title. And then Carl Edwards, who was right there in the last race, walking away before he's ever, you know, got his.
I know.
It's strange. I mean, it's so strange to me.
Well, Carl, as you know, Jim, has always been his own guy. He's you know, never fallen into the category of a follower. He's sort of a leader. And, you know, he's got young kids, you know, a young family. Maybe he really wants to get into politics. I mean, it's anyone seems to be able to get into politics these days. And,
I don't even know what the requirements are anymore.
I don't know. I mean, maybe you and I could still make a break. But, you know, he's got a good head on his shoulders. Carl always has. And good luck to him in what he's going to do. I'd like to see Dodge back in the sport. It seems like there is some movement in that direction.
They need to. And what the sport's doing now, a lot of these changes. And you and I were talking about this before. When Marchionne went down to that Ferrari festival in Daytona and just happened to sit next to the France family.
Absolutely.
Sergio Marchionne. Marchionne doesn't go anywhere if it's not planned out to the T. There's no way he was just randomly set next to the France family.
There's a
reason behind all of that. But
I think they made a mistake in getting out. I don't know. You know, I guess it was a financial situation at that point. But, I mean, NASCAR is still such a strong brand, and you've got to be in it to win it. And I just think it's, I'd like to see another manufacturer back, maybe another two.
Well, is there a more NASCAR-like production car on the road than the Charger? I mean,
exactly.
It's like the most. I mean, it fits the bill better than whatever the hell GM's going to bring next after the SS, mm-hmm. which you could never buy mm-hmm. here in the States mm-hmm. if you could find one.
No, I know a good car, but yeah, you're right. No, the Charger looks all race car, and I think get back in and compete.
So with Carl, the one thing I was thinking about was, Mike, that with Carl walking away like he did, and you're seeing drivers and just in general looking at how their perspective on the sport, does mm-hmm. that make Junior more likely to walk away at a younger age?
Well, I think, if in fact he starts a family likely will, particularly with the medical situation. I mean, Junior can't afford really to get in another big wreck or two, can he?
No, he can't. And how do you avoid that? I mean, it's part of the
well,
sport.
Can't.
You can't. That's part of the sport.
It's like if you're a boxer, you're going to get hit in the head. And if you're a lineman or a running back or whatever, you're going to take a pounding. So, yeah, I mean, I think, best of luck to him. I really like the guy. He's had a lot of pressure over a lot of years on him, but I don't, you'd hate to see him, badly hurt more so than, what problems he's already had.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's the kind of guy for the sport that even as an owner, he'll always be there.
Yeah.
I was just watching the Paul Newman documentary about his racing. And it was interesting to me that even as a great race car driver like Newman was, he was mm-hmm. just as influential, if not more so, as an owner with Newman Haas.
Yeah, without a doubt. Although he did step back a little bit. I mean, he loved to race more, I think, than walk around a track as team owner. I mean, his passion for racing, like Steve McQueen, was tremendous. And as you say, he was a very talented driver who started way too old. I mean, he could have been anything, I think, had he been racing in his 20s.
Yeah, but that was – and the other example, the other part of that story was, for people who haven't seen it, it's a great documentary. Adam Carolla and these guys put it together. But he lost a lot of friends in racing, too. I mean, Paul Newman mm. was watching, all these people that brought him into the sport, but three of them died in pretty horrific crashes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, no one got away without losing friends, back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, did they? And, it was a tough time. But, there's so many storylines this year in NASCAR, from the fact that Monster Energy emerges as the, title sponsor and Sprint goes away. And, Junior coming back, the changes in points, the Carl story, Clint Bowyer, replacing Tony, and Tony's team going to Ford Power, and Roush Fenway Racing down to two cars. Now, that's
wow.
something, Jim, that I just shocked to know about.
Is that because of the state of the sport, or is that the state of Roush? Can't be the state of Roush. They're doing so many other things well. Is it just... They look at a team like Penske and go, we don't want to deal with it?
I love that group of people. They're such a – been such a, good friend to racing and promoting, MIS races and winning MIS races. I don't know. I think the outfit is struggling. I think they're struggling with their not so much the power plants, but I think they're struggling just with the simulation side of racing and keeping up with some of the other teams. And
so expensive.
And I think, sponsorship has hurt, and they've lost, sponsors. And they're just struggling on the track.
Yeah. Yeah, you do see it. And I want to move on here. We're talking with Mike Brudnell, former Free Press racing rider, doing a lot of the stuff too. We're going to hear a lot from you here in 2017. I wonder if people in the States realize Liberty Media is now the owner of F1. And to have an mm-hmm. American company, it blows my mind that an American company owns F1, which has struggled for how many years to get a foothold in America? It's crazy. Out of every country in the world, you would think there's no way Americans would buy F1, but man, they're all in on it.
Yeah, it's that's one of the strangest things in motorsport, I think, in 30, 40 years in this country, that there is a F1 following here. I mean, there are fans of F1 in the States, but you know, you get these spurts, and then there's nothing, and then there's a race now in Austin. Some of the great events ever in F1 have gone away in America. I mean, even harking back to the days when we had a race here in Detroit. It was a bit of a Mickey Mouse deal as far as the track went, but there was some good racing. It was a lot of fun, and there was a lot of excitement about F1 here then.
And I was talking, I had Jackie Stewart on the podcast, and you're damn right I'm dropping that name, by the way. Anyway, I asked him about Alexander Rossi, and you know what his response was? Who?
No, I don't.
He said, who?
Yeah.
And I'm like, Alexander Rossi, he raced for Manor, he won the Indy 500. He's like, he was in F1. He goes, he'll never be back.
And he'll never what?
He'll never make it back to F1.
No, I don't think so.
You see all these feeder races in the E-Type and all the different series in Formula 3 and all the ones in Europe. But we look at IRL, or excuse me, IndyCar. I was saying RL. We look at IndyCar.
Roger Penske still calls it IRL.
Well, he can. He wins every damn race. He can do whatever he wants. He could call it the peanut race, and no one's going to correct him. Mm-hmm. But IndyCar is not that feeder for F1. I mean, when's the last time an F1 guy, Michael Andretti, went over there and really didn't do that well? I mean, you had Mansell come over here and stick his nose in IndyCar for a couple of years. Maybe these young guys that are racing in IndyCar now, my point is, like with Liberty Media, you have an American company. Maybe they're going to kind of push some of the IndyCar drivers to come over and play with them in their sport.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I sort of doubt there's anyone there now who, Joseph Newgarden.
That's the one guy I keep thinking about.
He went to Europe and tried, but just didn't have a sponsorship and the backing, and he's made a terrific choice now, obviously, getting the ride at Team Penske. But I don't see a lot of transfer right now. I think you will possibly see some guys like Rossi coming over and trying to find a ride, although the rides are pretty limited right now. But of course, money talks. When it comes to racing still. But I don't think, strangely enough, Jim, you'll see that transfer from, this side of the Atlantic across to Europe.
So when we look at F1 right now, I mean, and I want to go back to Nico Rosberg. One of the things that was one of the more interesting stories, how that all, came about. I always wonder with drivers, too, that with a guy like Nico, he seems like a very genuine person, at least what you see in the media and interviews and stuff.
Yeah.
How much of that, you've raced before, but you can imagine how much of that was, okay, I reached the pinnacle, I won, and how much of this, I don't want to put up with Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton's crap for another year.
I think that was a lot to do with it. It's the team has had great success on the track, but it's had great drama, behind the scenes and, after races and what's occurred between these two guys. I mean, both brilliant drivers. Lewis on his day is pretty much unbeatable. And Nico to be able to go head to head in uncertain terms as far as the orders that were coming down from the top and win a championship is pretty good effort.
Yeah.
I just think that he like his dad, they marched to the beat of their own drum I think he just decided, well, maybe the pressure is just not worth defending and going through the same deal again. And again, I think he seems to be happily married, and he'll move on, and he might do some sports car racing, I'm sure, and do some,
like Mark Webber, kind of like that, get out there and do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, of course, Mark is, you know, now, you know, retired from racing altogether, I believe. Which, you know, is a big loss because he was a terrific driver, a nice guy. But, you know, I think Nico's probably, you know, breathed a big sigh of relief when he announced it. And, you know, now Lewis you know, and his new guy, I mean, they can go at it. But I don't think that's going to be a partnership made in heaven.
No, Bottas is not going to. I'll be real curious to see how this plays out because Bottas is quiet, but he's not going to take anybody's crap.
Absolutely not.
No.
He's probably the most aggressive guy out there on his day. So, I mean, Lewis thinks, you know, this guy will play second fiddle to him and give him a corner every time he wants to take it. I doubt very much that's going to happen.
Who's the number one driver for Red Bull this year?
We've still got Daniel there, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is it Ricciardo? Ricciardo is the name and has had more wins. But Verstappen is far and away the guy that he's the wonder boy everybody's talking about.
He's fearless, and he's young, and he takes no prisoners, and he, you know, reputations don't mean a thing to him. I just hope he gets the car across the line and doesn't interfere too much with other folks in doing it. I mean, yet again, you know, winning is everything, and he's got that winning edge. And look, I like Daniel. I think Daniel Ricciardo is a terrific talent, you know, even though he's now not a veteran driver, but he's, you know, in that middle, you know, stages of his career. But I think head-to-head, there's not much in it. Maybe Verstappen's prepared to take a few more chances.
So you see in motorsports, and I don't know as much, maybe it's me, I notice it more in F1, there seems to be a mental component to this that is not as prevalent maybe in the other sports. What I mean by that is, like, there was a point where Vettel was the guy, and then all of a sudden you see Hamilton kind of getting in his head, and and then it felt like all of a sudden Hamilton overtakes Vettel, and Vettel's never been able to catch up. And you saw the frustration in Vettel last year with Ferrari. I mean, I saw him out the way that you would never. It seemed really out of character. Now I'm seeing Hamilton, and
let's see, Ferrari. Ferrari makes you do that.
It does it to everybody.
Look, I don't care who you are. I mean, everyone who's raced at Ferrari. I mean, it's a tremendous privilege and an honor, and you know, the prancing horse. I mean, who doesn't want to race for Ferrari?
But right.
I mean, behind the scenes, you know, I don't know what's going on there, and. You know, they have all the elements and all the money and all the testing and you'd think, but then again, it all goes up in smoke sometimes.
But and you think about what's going on with Ferrari, but with the new rules this year, I was thinking, if Max Verstappen goes into Australia and wins and just run and covers, and they cover Mercedes, Red Bull, which is a real possibility. A lot of people think. Red Bull, with their technology and the way they build their cars, this new rule package.
They're on the move again.
Okay.
They're definitely on the move again. I think it's going to be hopefully a driver's car, you know, a driver's series again with the car harder to drive, hopefully, and more driver input. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be pretty exciting, I think, leading up to Melbourne, and then at Melbourne, which is always, there's always something crazy going on in that first race.
But I keep thinking, though, like, if he wins the first couple races, all of a sudden, he's in Hamilton's head. He's the guy. He's the one. And he's crazier than anyone else on the track, the way he drives. So it's not like Nico, where you're going to get Nico such a clean, pure driver. You're going to get him to maybe lift a millisecond before you do, going and driving deep into a corner.
No.
Max is going to run you right off the track every time and won't even blink about. Well, what was the thing last year? He was braking and turning at the same time.
I think they've tried to talk to him a little bit, but look, he's got the youth and the fearlessness on his side, and after all, racing is about calculated risks, and you're not going to become world champion by backing off and letting someone else take a corner or you know, not fighting for every inch. And Max is a breath of fresh air, really, in that respect. I mean, almost like, you know, a second coming of you know, that era back in the 70s, 60s, 70s, when 80s, when they, everyone really raced hard and seemed like they backed off a little bit in the 90s and, you know, started to be a little bit of a parade here and there and, you know, a lot of those years. But, you know, I think we got another villain of sort of character in Max, you know.
Yeah, you do.
Jill was very brave and, you know, and spectacular.
And I was reading something from Toto Wolff this morning. He was talking about how they, you know, making some of the changes. And I think, for again, I'm going deep into F1 here, but you watch the dynamic between Mercedes, Toto Wolff, and Ross Braun, who's now consulting mm-hmm. Liberty Media. Yeah, have fun with that. Mm-hmm. You go lobby them as Mercedes. Ross Braun's going to kick your ass out of that building in 2 seconds. But his point was, he said, F1 is not a beta test. And that's a quote. He said, it's a technical mm-hmm. event. So to me, mm-hmm. it struck me as like, you can read into it, but I'm reading it going, all right, Mercedes is already saying it. It's January. Like, we don't like these rule changes. Quit doing it. But they've always done that in F1, right? I mean, we've always screwed with the cars in F1. That's the nature of it.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, things change and, you know, you got to adapt. And I mean, yeah, if you're winning championships, manufacturer championships, you don't want any changes, you know, but if you've got an advantage over the next guy, but, I want to see good racing. You know, you want to see technology advance, and it is the premier motorsports series in the world. So yeah, we expect that. But still, again, I'm a little bit of a traditionalist. I want to see you know, guys like Verstappen and Daniel and Bottas, who, you know, are chargers. I'd like to see them being able to get something out of the car, you know, from a point of view that I'm a better driver than the next guy.
Exactly. Yeah, that was a lot of point. I mean, you heard last year people would say like there were probably six drivers in F1 that could have driven for Mercedes in one races last year with those cars.
Absolutely. Look, yeah. You go right down the the grid, and you put people in equally prepared, you know, spec open wheel cars, and there's nothing between them. I mean, honestly, they're all good drivers, and they're all outstanding, you know, open wheel guys. I mean, it's just, yeah, when you have a car that might have 8 mile an hour, you know, in it, you know, down the main straight quicker than, you know, the car you're driving, well, how are you going to beat it?
Yeah, you're not. I mean, and that's you can see the frustration. Well, Fernando Alonso, I also expect a lot from McLaren this year. I'm real curious to see what Honda's mm-hmm. going to do with this, because it seems like they're on this. Last thing I want to touch on, IndyCar, in the midst of all this, we're talking about what's going on with NASCAR and their changes and trying to get people back in. And then you mm-hmm. look at F1 and you're like, all right, they're trying to grow an audience here in the state. Maybe it's me because I'm a slappy, but I think we're seeing real growth, not a spike, but real growth in IndyCar as a sport around this country.
Yeah. I don't think you're wrong, Jim. I think the Indy 500 last year, the 100th, you know, running was tremendous success. You know, 480,000 people at the race or in and around the race. You had a great, you know, first-time winner. You know, you've got some really hard-charging young Americans now coming to the fore. And look, when you look at the whole deal at IndyCar with the ovals, the street courses and the road courses, I love it. I mean, I love the mix. You know, the TV package obviously has to get stronger. But the new car, you know, that we're going to see in 2018, from, you've seen the renderings, the sketches, I think it looks pretty sexy.
It's a beautiful car. It's one of those cars that, Mike, you're going to like, and you're going to get it. If you're a kid, you're like, I'm going to put a picture of that on my wall. It's a cool looking car.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and I think what we've seen, you know, in the past with the last, you know, this present car last year with a lot of wings and a lot of all sorts of weird things hanging off it. And yeah, it stuck. You know, I mean, yeah, the lap times came down because there was a lot of downforce and a lot of craziness with that car. But I mean, it was ugly. I'm sorry. It was a boxy, not attractive look.
No.
And I think this new car is going to take us back a lot to, the Gurney Eagles and, you know, that we saw at Indian in the 70s and 80s and some, like, nice, sleek looking lines. And I'm just hoping that they'll race well.
Oh, that's what I want to see, is Tom Sineva, Johnny Rutherford out there. Those kind of cars, that look, that was just a beautiful look. And you're right. The cars now in IndyCar, I mean, with all due respect, they look like, you're right, they kind of look to me like the Pontiac Aztec of racing. There's just panels on them for no reason. And I know they have a purpose, but when you, as a fan, you're going, I really don't know why you need 18 feet of sheet over the wheels.
I know. Well, you know, look, I understand some concern about the, you know, closing of the back, tires, and, you know, but the thing ended up looking like a hybrid sports car, open wheel car, and I couldn't work out which it was, you know. And look, you know, I'm all about open wheel. That's what it's called. I mean, you know, let's call it closed wheel then, or I don't know, let's not call it open wheel racing. But then again, I know that, you know, IndyCar are very, you know, they're looking at making racing safer, and there's nothing wrong with that. Yet, you know, you still got to have a look and a style and otherwise, you know, you change the whole formula.
Yeah, it's an interesting. It's, you want to grow so quickly as a sport, and there's so much pressure, I know, on IndyCar to sustain this, and I'm sure there's some concern after 100, but they got to do it right. And that's why I always say, like, to me, it's, I see real growth when I see real growth.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
F1, no, I think it. You know, I think can it come back? Can it challenge NASCAR? Can it be the top series again, like it was in the 80s and 90s, early, you know, 90s through to the split? You know, in America, I'm not sure that anything, I mean, with today, with younger folk and audiences, you know, so looking for so many different other forms of entertainment, you know, can it reemerge? I think the racing is as good as any, if not better, than NASCAR and F1 and anything, you know, you'll see. I mean, sports car racing and IndyCar racing for me have been tremendous over the past few years.
Absolutely.
You know, just the competition, you know, and so I think there's nothing wrong with the competition. There's nothing wrong with the racing. There's always something going on. But kind of capture the audience again, and, you know, who knows?
It's not an easy thing where you all of a sudden just get a driver who's incredibly popular. You can't say that because you've had Elio Castroneves, who's on Dancing with the Stars and is as electric as anyone in motorsport racing. And even that wasn't enough. At the end of the day, the car's got to look cool and they got to race hard. Yeah. They got to race hard. I mean, that's what you do.
We've got to be able to see it too. I mean, there's lots of ways to follow racing, obviously now more so than, you know, when, you know, we were all growing up, through all sorts of, you know, various social media, et cetera, et cetera. But the racing has to be good. You have to have, you know, star power and have reason for people to turn it on and spend their time with it. But I think there's nothing wrong with the driver lineup. I think it's gotten even stronger. Young guys are coming through. Connor Daly, I think, is going to be really, really, really good this year. And Joseph is going to have his work cut out at Penske, but he's obviously a talented, young, fearless type of guy. Rossi will improve, and Elio still might make it for Indy 500.
He could. There's so much good things. There's so many interesting things and compelling storylines in motorsports around the world right now. That's what makes it really fun. Although my one wish for 2017, it'll never happen. I want the Australian supercars to come race Belle Isle here in Detroit just once.
Well, yeah, I it's funny. I pitched that to Roger.
How'd that go?
has his own team down there, as you know. And Marcus Ambrose was driving for it for a short period of time, but he's gone. But I know that Roger loves it, and he goes over there, and he'll go to several races during the year, including the Bathurst 1000. But those supercars, and you know, I don't know. There'd be a lot of rubbing and banging at Belle Isle, but gee, it'd be fun.
I would love, and I always ask the drivers this. I'm going to ask you the same question. If you could race on one track anywhere in the world, so we'll take IndyCar. If you could take IndyCar anywhere in the world outside of the U.S. and run them on one track, where would it be?
One track. So you're going to give me like an oval or a road course or a
your decision. Where do you want to run? Do you want to run the ring? Do you want to run Spa? Do you want to run? Yeah. You know, where do you want to go? Do you want to go Bathurst?
Yeah, well, Bathurst is spectacular. There's nothing like it until you go there and actually see them come up and over the mountain and through the mountain and at speed, and then down Conrad Straight at close to 200 mile an hour in production cars. It's insane. I haven't been to the ring. Spa is spectacularly fast down the hill and up the hill. Indianapolis, the speedway itself, I've driven five laps there in an Indy car and scared the hell out of myself. can't imagine how I could do it with 33 other cars or 32 other cars around me. And Long Beach, of course, and Road America. I've driven Road America in a GR1 Corvette in a World Challenge race and had, you know, the time of my life. I'm guessing if you know, I had one race to do, I'd turn back the clock 40 years and go to the ring and try to negotiate 22 miles of hell.
That is the most insane track. Whoever, when they came up with that, they must just sat around going, "We're gonna make a track that you odds are you ain't gonna make it off this thing." But
absolutely, I mean, it's incredible. I don't know how many turns exactly there are. Like, is it 107 or some crazy?
Right, I think it's more than that. It's like 168 or some crazy number.
Yeah, well, right. There you go. Okay. And everyone's different, and how you can memorize those turns at speed with the cars that they drove, which were totally powerful and unsafe. Those guys had big ones.
I always wanted to take one of the J-type 4 GTs from the 60s and the Mulsanne Straight at Le Mans before they put the turn, before they put the kink in. So you could go 3.7 miles flat out. And they were doing what? 250 miles an hour.
They were doing 250 day and night.
You're insane. I mean, you got to have, you're nuts to do that. I talk to these guys and they just go like, yeah, you're going like 240, 250. It wasn't that big of a deal. Like, yeah, yes, it was.
Yeah. Well, when you're in a car that was doing 190 max, and then someone's coming up behind you at 250, and you see the lights at night coming, in your mirrors. I mean, how the heck you stayed out of the way? I mean, I don't know how you did that either, because the the closing speeds were spectacular then.
And it's not, for folks that when you watch Le Mans, and I encourage everyone to sit down and watch it at least once, that's a two-lane road. It's not a racetrack. Mm-hmm. That's a two-lane road that they're going that fast down that straight. That is the most insane piece of real estate I've ever seen.
Yeah, no, it just shows you that these guys, had everything. People think they're not athletes. People think that they're whatever, but they were the whole package. You know, they were brave, they were fast, they were smart, they were crazy, they were, you know, I mean, it's an amazing sport and at all levels.
I really hope that my buddy AJ Baim, his book Go Like Hell, becomes a movie. I know the rights were taken a couple of years ago, but we're still waiting on it, but that's such an amazing story. It needs to be told in a bigger form.
There's a lot of great racing movies that haven't been made, and there's been a lot of bad ones that have. And
Days of Thunder. Yeah.
that's not even the bad one.
So what's the worst racing movie? Now you got me thinking about it. Let me see. There was Stroker Ace with Burt Reynolds. That was a horrible NASCAR movie, and I love Burt Reynolds.
Well, I didn't like Talladega Nights. I'm sorry, my friends all laughed and thought that was fantastic. But I mean, I'm sorry, I just didn't like it.
What'd you think about Rush?
It's a great movie, huh?
What'd you think about Rush?
I went to the theater in Birmingham, the old movie theater there in Birmingham, here, and watched that by myself. There was no one in the matinee, and being an old guy, I got a discount on seniors and sat there with a box of popcorn and watched that movie by myself. I think it was the 1 o'clock movie slot, and I enjoyed it. Sorry, I enjoyed it.
Meh. And I like Ron Howard. I don't know. I'm so enamored with that story, and there's so much to it. Maybe it's one of those things that I had read too much about it.
Exactly.
That's the problem. You know too much about it.
An hour and a half or 2 hours. How can you cover it? But look, I love James Hunt. I thought he was an extraordinary individual. Not all good, but definitely a character. Who was a terrific talent, a rascal and a womanizer and all those other things, but extremely brave as well. And he and Nicky did have a tremendous rivalry, and I thought that was all brought out pretty well in the movie. But it's funny, my favorite movie, I've got to go back 60, 70 years ago, when I think it was Cagney did a race movie. He was a short track board driver or something. And
really?
You ever see it? Okay. Yeah. It's you've got to see this movie. But some of the actual, scenes, that were, film clips and things from that period of racing at the state fairs and on the boards and unbelievably crazy stuff, guys flying out of the track, huge wrecks into the stands. I mean, they were daredevils, those guys. That's all they were, right? A lot of them were World War One fly boys that came out of the Army or Air Force or whatever they had in those days, and start driving race cars, like a lot of the Indy 500 guys, early drivers, were early aviators, just crop dust to pilots.
Look at Ken Miles. I mean, Ken Miles drove for Carroll Shelby won at Le Mans. He got screwed by Ford, but anyway, I mean, the guy was, everyone's like, oh, he's just some British guy. Like, no, he was a tank commander in World War II. This guy,
and he drove like it too. I mean, Ken was fearless and versatile and a terrific personality.
And it was a shame. Gone way too soon. That's the next story that I want to see in a movie. I think you got to do a story about Carroll Shelby. There's mm-hmm. no one. What he did on his own to build that company and the way he did it, and not just the GTs, but the Cobras themselves, and going out and finding this company. Everyone's like, oh, it's an American car. I'm like, no, that's an English body. He bought a company that was going out of business, right? And he bought them out.
A damn shame that he's gone. And the car itself, the Cobra, I mean, that's one I'll never be able to afford or have, but it's one I lust after.
They were talking about, I was reading a book about Just Call Me Carol, which is about, it's from one of the guys who was a mechanic for him. And mm-hmm. one of the things they were saying when they finally closed the big shop, when they were out there by the airport in Los Angeles and they went to Torrance and they were selling off some of their inventory, they were selling this lady bought a Cobra Daytona for $4,000.
Oh, get out.
No, serious. And she's like, $4,000 seems like a lot. And they're all looking at him like, are you serious? And that car is worth what, like $6 million if you can get one now?
I'd say $4 million.
Yeah. 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 She got it for $4,000. But I'd love to see that story. I want to see what happened in that shop in Venice. I wanted these guys showed up, you see them like at these racetracks and they just look like they don't, pardon my French, don't give a shit. They got their beers, they're smoking their cigarettes, and their cars are better than yours.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, they were American heroes, and and pioneers, and they you know, crew cuts and, you know, bus cuts, whatever you called them in those days.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys, you know, were just just geniuses, really.
Phil Remington is a name that I think everybody in automotive, if you're a racing fan and you don't know who Phil Remington is, you need to know, because that's the guy. Carroll Shelby was the leader of the band, but Phil Remington
right.
was the guy that really, without him, they didn't wind up where they were. I mean, that guy was just amazing at what he could do to cars.
Yeah, well, I mean, there were, American racing in that period was just had a lot of guys with so much natural talent as far as building engines and building cars and with a lot of brute horsepower but style wise they all look great.
Oh, they were so cool looking.
And they sounded so good. I mean, sorry about this, but man, I don't like motorsport without that rumble that you know, deep down sound that just gets your hair sticking.
Are you referring to the Formula One slot car racing that sound that we get? I tend to like, you know.
I know. I don't like it at all.
No.
I know the cars are, you know, faster and whatever, and, you know, and they're producing tremendous horsepower from a little, you know, engine and da-da-da-da. It's all friendly and green and, you know, was supposed to be, but I miss the Cosworths. I miss those days when you could hear the cars screaming and grunting and groaning and people downshifting and heel and toeing and big revs.
I always wonder I'm going to wrap this up, Mike, because I could talk to you for days. But Mike Brudnell, you've been so gracious with your time this morning, and I really do appreciate this, but I always wonder, here in Detroit, Roger, and I think in the automotive world in general, Roger Penske is at the pinnacle, right? I mean, it's fair to say that you think about how he reaches across not just NASCAR, but IndyCar and other disciplines in racing and what he does as a businessman and just as a guy. How different would his path have been if Mark Donohue didn't die?
Formula One may have, you know, continued to be in his, in his future. And, although, you know, Mark winning the 500, I mean, I know it has and still does, affect him deeply because, you know, he loved Mark that partnership was so so strong, yet I mean, Roger's lost drivers before, as we know, and moves forward. He's never a guy to move back. So your guess is as good as mine there. But what a wonderful individual, and Detroit's been lucky to have him. And and he claims Detroit, you know, and Birmingham and Bloomfield Hills as his own, and he's done tremendous things for the city, and continues to be, in my opinion, the greatest, team owner in the world. Team owner in the world, I'll say that for sure.
He's the second coolest too, but well, Enzo was first. I mean, Enzo will always be first. I'm sorry.
Point of a global, perception, but I think what Roger's been able to do. With all forms of motorsport and business and just his personal pedigree. I mean, he's just an extraordinary individual.
Oh, he is.
I would have liked to have seen a Roger as mayor of Detroit or governor of this state. But of course, his businesses have kept him so busy. He's racing that. He only sleeps 3 or 4 hours a night.
And he does all his deals like at 10 or 11 o'clock at night. If you're an assistant for Roger Penske, you don't sleep ever.
No. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so much there that yet is to be done in his life. And, the gentleman is honestly, he'll run rings around you and me as far as energy and his ability to you know, move on. And just we've been very lucky in this part of the world, Jim, to say we have him.
Absolutely, there is no one like him. Although, again, if I could be one person for a week, I would love to have been Enzo Ferrari in the 60s. Just to wonder, I wonder what it was like to be the man. I mean, to walk into any room, any racetrack in the world, and everybody stopped. You're Enzo Ferrari. You can walk in, everyone's like, there he is. That's the guy.
Oh yeah, I mean, he was quite an intimidating or charismatic, whatever you'd like to say, presence. I mean, although I think the Deuce loved beating him at Le Mans, didn't he? Back
in
66 or 65?
For a couple of years, he covered him for 3 years, and then he just walked away, saying, "Well, I beat your ass 3 times, we're done."
I mean, that was a real rivalry there, Edsel's dad, I think, really wanted to go out there and kick Enzo in the butt.
Which I believe is, just to come full circle with this, I believe General Motors is going to do the same with the mid-engine Corvette with Ford and the GT. I think that mid-engine Corvette is going to wind up at Le Mans immediately. If it's not already built somewhere in some skunk work factory around here, there's no way they're going to let Ford snooker them like they did last year. And they sandbag like crazy. You don't just put 2 seconds a lap on a car if you don't know damn well what you're getting out of it. Ford knew exactly what they were doing last year, and they nailed them on it.
The preparation was terrific, and they had a great group of drivers, didn't they?
Oh, they were amazing. I mean, it was an amazing team. But if you're Corvette and you're Chevrolet, you're walking back going, "That will never happen again. That will never happen again. Oh, yeah, we're not going to get covered like that."
Yeah, they got their butt handed to them, and they don't like that.
No.
So yeah, I mean, that's all good. I mean, I really love the state of sports car racing right now.
It's fun, Mike Brunell. This was great, man. Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
I'd love to do it, Jim, and look forward to seeing you at races. It's going to be interesting at MIS this year. We've got a new leadership team out there, as you know.
We do, yeah. Yeah, Roger Curtis, for a lot of people don't know, Roger is now working for the state of Michigan. So
yes, along with Sammy. I think Sammy Lukaszewicz joined him just recently.
Oh, I didn't know that. I don't know. She's awesome, too. Yeah, it's going to be fun to see, especially by that point in the year, when we get to MIS, fans and everyone else will have a good handle on the changes, the rules.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it evolves
to
that point.
The dates of the Firekeepers Casino 400, back Father's Day, Pure Michigan 400, August 11, 13, Firekeepers Casino 400, June 16, 18. I think this new point system, Jim, will sort of help those races. I really do.
I do too, especially heading towards Richmond and stuff when you actually have these. You're right, absolutely. It'll be fun to see. I still wish they would end the season in Daytona. Nothing against Homestead, but that's a boring-ass racetrack.
Yeah. I mean, it's it's nice, the weather down there. I mean, I like going down to the Keys while I've been down there just to look around. It's scenic down there, and fun. But the Super Bowl finishes the season. You'd think perhaps that would be the way to go with this lot of changes going on at present. So. But let's see how Clint Boyer. Do you think Clint can do something at Tony's team?
No, I hate to say that because I love him as a guy. I just don't see it. I don't see whatever that fire is that drivers get. And when it goes away, I can't think of a driver that got it back. When it's gone, it's gone. Right. And I don't think Boyer's got it anymore.
Yeah. And what about Jimmy winning 8?
Yeah. You know, the problem with them is, and it's not a problem, Chad Knaus is so damn good at what he does. Those cars are just bulletproof, and everyone else seems to have a problem or anything else. If anything goes on in front of them, he is just always there. He's so consistent, and that's what's so maddening about it. I mean, it makes you crazy as a fan because you appreciate the hell out of him, but my God, I mean, it's nothing flashy. It's just boom. And they seem to be off at the beginning of a race, and I know they always run loose. And you watch them time and time again, and nobody else can do what they do. I've never seen a team that dials a car in like they do every single race.
Well, see, they continually work on it and get it better. And then Jimmy, all of a sudden, he's 15th, and then he's 4th.
Right.
You go, well, hang on, I didn't even see that happen.
Yeah, and then but maybe this year, you know, when he wins a couple races, then all of a sudden they start doing their secret lab stuff for the mile and a half tracks in the playoffs. Yeah. Now, because of the points during these segments, maybe that keeps them more involved in the regular season and they don't get that kind of advantage.
Yeah, yeah. So one last question to you. Can Danica make any impression? Look, I got to give her a due. She beat a lot of guys that supposedly are better race car drivers than her last year. She consistently finished, you know, in that top 22, 23. She couldn't make a lot of moves toward the top 15, but how did you think she performed, and can she ever perform better than, you know, she is at the moment?
She can. I think Ford, you know, you think about Ford right now, they don't have, how many teams is Ford sponsoring?
Like two or three, isn't it?
Yeah. So you're looking at, I think Ford's going to do really well for Haas and them. So they should have some more power for, you know, it'll be interesting to see what she can do. Cause she is fast. She's fast. And maybe these segment races help her more of her mindset to where you're only running for 100 laps. And it's not about physique or anything. Cause she's stronger than 80% of the people I know.
Yeah. Well, she's a very fit young woman.
Yeah. I think maybe she will get better at it. I hope so. I think it'd be great for the sport if she stays up front.
Yeah, I really she was such, you know, a good open wheel oval driver. I know that doesn't necessarily translate into driving these bigger, heavier cars. I mean, open wheel cars are more like big go-karts and they turn and brake and accelerate. She has to work at this car, but she needs a breakthrough, and you know, and I'd love to see it because I think she's talented. She's, you know, she's very popular, and I know some. She's got a lot of harsh critics, but I'm not so much one of those. So good luck to her.
It's low hanging fruit. I mean, for a lot of people, it's just trolling on it. I mean, that you can take a shot at her. Because of her gender, but
exactly.
She's a great driver. She should be able to do this. Hey, Juan Pablo Montoya drove everything in the world. He came over to NASCAR and he sucked.
Yeah.
He can't say it was the equipment. He had great cars. He just, for whatever reason.
He overdrove the car. You know that. I mean, he overdrives everything. But when you overdrive, you know, these cars, you're just going slower.
Right.
And, you know, he's such an aggressive guy that, you know, I just don't think he could ever bridle that progression and learn, you know, how the car performs and the changes that were to be made on it. And, you know, like one of the most talented, natural, you know, gifted drivers in the last 30 years. I mean, when he struggles, anyone can struggle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, he's... still an interesting character, but yeah, that was a great lesson for me about NASCAR, watching these guys, which again tells you how great Mario Andretti was to go out there in a car he'd never driven before
and
win the Daytona 500. And when they didn't when Holman Moody didn't even want him to win.
Yeah, I mean, Mario was a complete package, a lot like Gurney and AJ, even though AJ was a bit, you know, harder on equipment and, you know, that, and he grabbed it by the throat. I mean, Mario had the whole deal going for him, as well as his good looks and you know, his ability to get the most out of anything.
Oh, he was the best. He still is. He's an amazing guy too, Mike. Thank you, buddy. Man, he's so cool. Every time Andretti shows up to a track, it's just like everybody just stops and looks at him. Like
if you have 2 or 3 hours to sit with him and let him go, I mean, the stories are amazing. I've had the privilege a couple of times just to sit and listen. And, you know, like you, a bit of a slappy I should keep it professional. But once he starts talking, I mean, you know, it's an encyclopedia.
Yeah. Yeah, he had one of the most compelling things I've ever heard. He has so many great stories, but in that Newman documentary, talking about right before Paul died, Paul came to see him and just sat there talking to him, and they were at the track. Yeah. And Mario knew something was different because Paul was staring into his eyes, just listening, and never said he was sick, nothing. And then and he said he left, and Mario's like, okay, something's different here. And that was the last time he saw him because Paul didn't want anyone to see him when he was in the hospital.
No, he didn't. You're a very, very proud man, and you know, wanted to face, I guess, those things, you know, with his family.
But the respect he had for those drivers, I mean, for a guy like Mario Andretti too, you could see he took genuine joy in it, man. So, all right, Mike. Well, we're gonna get to it. I'm ready for some racing now, man. Now I get the juices going. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to run.
Yeah, well, I'm heading down to Florida. The Orlando Bushnell area down there to run a 24-hour pro-am karting event. So I'm in hard training. I'm off the beer, trying to lose another 10 pound and harden up, doing my push-ups because I'm old and creaky and you know, doing these hour, 2 hour stints in a go-kart just about kills you.
Oh my God! Yeah, I'm curious to see. I don't even know where they're going to be showing it this weekend. The Daytona, 24 Hours of Daytona. With Jeff Gordon driving for Cadillac with the Taylor brothers.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, the Taylor brothers are actually, well, Jordan's running in this karting event after the 24 hours. So
really?
I'll see him. Yeah, he and Zach Veach, the Indy Lights driver, Larry Foyt, the owner, and a bunch of sports car guys get together and run this event. So it's called the 24 Hours of America. It's the only outdoor 24-hour karting race in the U.S. and North America, one of the few in the world, and it's a hell of a lot of fun. And you can actually, you know, compete as a novice and or a pro or as a semi-pro or a weekend warrior. And if you want to know about it, it's called the 24 Hours of America. It's got a website, and I think they're still looking for entries.
Okay. Yeah, not me. No. New. No.
No. It's a lot of fun, buddy.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun, but no. I can't even stay awake 2 hours to watch a couple episodes of The Newsroom on HBO. So,
well, yeah, when you're at night running this thing and, you know, you're in part of the course where the lights aren't as good as they maybe should be under lighting, it gets pretty exciting.
I saw the Martinville lighting yesterday. They were showing that. I saw the pictures of them lighting up last night. They're going to have a night race there. I think it's going to be awesome.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Really
cool. Yeah. So they're going to have a night race at MIS, do you think?
They got to. They have to. It makes sense. They need to. I know Roger always talked about it, but they should do it. Yeah. If you put Wi-Fi in there, put the damn lights in.
What about some duels? I think down the road they're looking at maybe, you know, having a couple of duels instead of the 400s, but I don't know. That's just a rumor.
I'd like to see that. My other theory is that if you're leading at the end of the segment, you get to decide which direction you go on the track. That would get rid of all this camber stuff immediately. Everything would be
Mate,
neutral.
Look, you have a great you know, weekend, and thank you very much for the opportunity to chat.
This is fun, Mike. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right. Well, there you go. Mike Brudenell wrote for the Free Press for years, a racing writer, and knows more about auto racing than almost anybody I know, and just a cool dude, and you can hear, a genuine racer. 24 hours racing go-karts, man, that's pretty strong. So hopefully you got another lot going on in motorsports. Our next guest on the podcast next week, Larry Murphy, NHL great and also a huge NASCAR fan. I'm going to try to get into some more conversation, too, about what's going on with NAFTA and building cars and what that means and the potential and the influence of it and concern over in China and Mexico and it's a global industry that we're in right now with automobiles, and just saying you built it in America doesn't mean all the parts came from America, and you got Buick building cars in China and Mexico and everything else, so there's a lot of brands that are concerned about what's going on. It's an interesting story you should follow and kind of dive a little bit deeper into. As always, subscribe to the podcast here on iTunes. You can also join us, WCSX, the Garage Page. My name is Jim O'Brien, at Jim in the D. We'll go out and drive in the snow because it's January in Michigan. It's what we do. See you.